Did you notice Sportsnet took this and used it as their theme? Did you notice Ron McLean mention the Sergei Bobrovsky freezing the puck for a faceoff that led to the winning goal after Pierre Maguire had pointed out the day before that nobody had mentioned that? Everybody listens. Welcome back. Melnick in the afternoon on TSN 690 with Andy Bennett, John Still.
Puck cleared down by Johnston. Here's Ekholm. Shoveling it out of the zone. Nugent Hopkins unable to get it past Pavelski. Now Nugent Hopkins keeps it alive. Oh, McDavid stopped. Rebound score! And the Oilers tie it. Bouchard on the rebound of the McDavid shot. Under a minute to go on the power play for the Stars. Connor Brown nearly able to clear. Duchesne works it back out for Harley. Pushing one. Blocked in front. And now the Oilers jump out of it. They have a two-on-one. Short-handed. Here is Brown. Slides it across. Gunmark scores!
Matthias, Connor Brown says his pass to you was a shit burger. Wasn't very good. And you put the puck in the net pretty easily. Could you tell that as he was passing it over to you?
Well, yeah, like I thought it was a pretty good pass. I kind of got it to my front foot, so I had to adjust to it. But, I mean, I would not call it a shit burger.
I love it when everything works out like that. Good afternoon, Mike Johnson. How are you?
Good afternoon. Yes, they're stealing my intro music. They're stealing Pierre Maguire's thoughts, and we love it because everyone's dialed in. Apparently we're allowed to swear on the radio now. Is that a new thing?
No, it's very selective. Very
easy,
selective.
Okay. Easy.
No, because
that was in the guise of journalism, right? We ought to be accurate.
Yes.
So we have to quote the people. We're not swearing. Somebody else was swearing, reporting the news, which had swearing in it. God, I just want to know what I can say when I come on.
Okay, so in the interest of full disclosure, I sent it to Andy, and I was hoping that Andy would not bleep it because the whole effect would be lost in that instance with the Q and the A. And I was proud of her because we started the show using the same clip.
I did test run it, Mike, because Mitch is constantly trying to slip F-bombs by me in things that he sends me to edit. So I tested the bleep, and it didn't have the same punch.
No, it wouldn't. But it's amazing, like, you watch Pat McAfee on TV in the middle of the afternoon, and they don't swear, say the F word, but they say anything else they want on television pretty liberally. So I never quite know what the rules are. And then every time I'm about to say it, I'm like, nope, there's no way I'm going to be allowed to say this. So I got to be careful not to swear. I always found, I don't think I swear that much, just kind of day-to-day operations. But when I played sports, guys, I swore like a sailor, like, every other word out of my mouth was a swear word. At myself, at the opponent, at my line mate, at the life, everything. I was always cursing. And it would take me like 4 weeks after the season to stop the dressing room swearing mouth. And so you get so used to it, it would slip out when it should. I mean, I'm doing it with my parents. And I'm like, this is terrible. I'm like, what are you doing, Mike? It's ridiculous. So you got to be careful when you're on air not to swear.
Yeah, we started a swear jar for Aaron Ward several years ago. And occasionally he slips up. It's kind of like a kangaroo court thing. At the end of the year, we have a party based on the number of swear words that Aaron either starts to say or says outright. How about Matt Rempe? And what did he say? Jiminy Cricket? That was like a Howie Meeker flashback.
Jiminy
Instead
Cricket.
Of a swear word, he used Jiminy Cricket.
It's crazy. Like Mark Scheifele notoriously does not swear. Shane Doan, who was a pretty ferocious player, would not swear. He would say fudge.
Right.
Oh, for fudge sakes.
Right.
Or frick.
God bless those people. I don't know how they do it. Yeah.
I know what you want to say. You can say it around me. I'm not going to get mad at you. It's fine. So, I don't have that kind of self-control.
Okay. Other than the fact that the Oilers' season, and perhaps more, was on the line after they fell behind 2-0, what happened to Dallas?
Well, I think what happened to Dallas was very similar to what happened to Edmonton in Game 3, where the Oilers were awesome in the first period, and then Dallas came out in the second, started skating, making plays, being more aggressive, winning more battles, being more engaged. The team with the lead got maybe a little bit passive, thinking we have the lead here, we can be a bit more cautious. And it got away from Edmonton in game three the same way it got away from Dallas in game four. And, you know, this is what happens when there's two good teams. Like, the teams are so evenly matched and they're both very good that there will be stretches where one team controls play and the other team can't seem to solve it. And, you know, for the Stars, it lasted 25, 30 minutes of game time where that happened. But what was unique to that game was that it's one thing for the other team to push play. It's going to happen. That's the case when there are good teams. There's nothing you can do about it. You know, you try to plan or control, you try to stop it from occurring too long, but it happens. But what Dallas did, which was very unusual for them in game four, was that they started making a lot of mistakes in the neutral zone. They started giving up odd man rushes, which is something they don't do. Now, you can play on their own end, but they're not giving you three-on-twos and two-on-ones and breakaways. They don't give those up, and they started to give up rush chances, especially in the second period. And Edmonton, McDavid, or otherwise, is going to take advantage when you give them rush chances. So not only did Edmonton play well, but Dallas also dropped a little bit in their execution as the game was getting away from them. They did not stay patient. They kind of started forcing plays, which worked against them. And the Oilers, you're right, like, that was the series, very likely, if they lost the game last night, and maybe more when you think about Draisaitl and everything else. So that was a massive game, but the Oilers deserve full credit. Like, when Stuart Skinner gets scored on his first goal, Mitch, you're thinking, oh boy. Well, and then Darnell Nurse, of all people, has one going off his pants. You're like, his days are going very poorly, and this is it. But then when Stuart Skinner stops that Tyler Seguin chance, which would have made it 3-0, and the third goal does change the complexion of attempted comeback big time, when he stopped that, it sort of settled him down, settled the team down. And I give the Oilers full credit. They were very sort of mature, professional, responsible game, and they played really well. And it wasn't just McDavid, although he had 3 assists, which is, we barely talk about it when he gets 3 assists, because that's what he does seemingly every other night. But it was McLeod, and it's Corey Perry, and it was Kulak having a good game, and other guys being involved, Janmark getting a shorty. It wasn't just the big guys, which is very much a positive for Edmonton.
Yeah, look, I think we all know that Darnell Nurse is not a $9.5 million a year player, but he's not as bad as what we've seen for a good chunk of the playoffs. I was happy for him last night. He, for all the scrutiny and abuse that he is under and has taken, I was happy that he was able to bounce back and contribute to a win for Edmonton and stretch the series out.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's exactly it. Now, part of evaluating a player's performance, like, you do kind of have to factor in the salary, because, you know, teams are built with a finite amount of money. You need to get value for the money. So Darnell Nurse might be a whatever. Is he a $6 million defender? Sure. Something like that, right? But you got to get over the fact that he makes $9 million. It makes no difference. You know, like, it's not going to change the way he plays. It's not going to change anything. It's just going to get you frustrated. So, and the way Nurse started the day, Mitch, with this sort of terse, short, abrupt answers in his morning skate presser. When you do that, and I have no problem with it, right? Like, I have no problem with a guy being frustrated or feeling annoyed at his game or at the reaction to his game or at the media, whatever. Some guys want to talk it out. Some guys want to be short. And if you're going to be short like that, you're going to shine an even brighter spotlight on your game. Now, if you don't mind that, and you don't mind the pressure that if it doesn't go well, you're going to get killed, but, you know, you know that anyways, then deal with the media however you need to deal with it to make yourself feel good to play your best game. And he played really well. I know him and Kulak were on for the first two goals against. Kulak, I think, getting used to playing on the odd side, on the right side, and then Nurse, you know, off his pants. But the duo were really good in the game. So I'm with you. I was really happy for him to sort of respond to the noise that was surrounding his game and playing really well, contributing to a win, picking up a point. His underlying numbers were really strong, which is something that he is frequently not as strong in. And so I guess Knobloch really pulled all the right strings when, you know, switching up the defense and switching up the forward lines. It all seemed to work, and especially for Nurse.
You mentioned Nurse pregame before we bring John in here. I mentioned this yesterday. I was impressed because, you know, you don't see this very often. Not only a goaltender willing to meet the media, but sitting at the podium the day of a game, as important as that was last night, I would imagine it was kind of comforting for Oilers fans to see Stuart Skinner answering some questions yesterday.
Yeah, I give Stuart Skinner a lot of credit, Mitch. When you kind of follow him throughout the year, and there's no doubt, you know, he's had some really good moments, obviously. He's always a really good team. But he's also had some real rocky performances. And when he's had the tough performance, he generally talks about them sort of eloquently and thoughtfully and under control. And he, you know, he doesn't run and hide. He speaks about it. So, you know, whether it's good or bad, Stuart Skinner going on the podium and speaking about his game or his team's game is not really new, because that's something that he does quite well. And part of maybe the reason why he does not string multiple bad games together, because he sort of flushes it publicly and then moves on past it.
Mike, I still think it's going to be Dallas in six, although I am starting to get a little worried. You were talking about underlying numbers. Can the Stars win this series if Chris Tanev is out?
Of course they can, but their chances to do so took a big hit. There's no doubt about that. The reason why he was such a big trade deadline acquisition is because he filled a very specific and enormous need on Dallas. Dallas is, of course, an incredible team, very deep, but they don't have really any more top four defensemen. That's why they went out and got one. And so they have Haskinen, Lindell, they have Harley, and they have Tanev. After that, you're talking about Suter, who has, you know, been great for a long, long time. He can't play top 4 minutes anymore really well. You know, you got Petrovic, you got Lundqvist, who's not in the lineup. None of those guys are going to be capable of playing the 24 minutes against the kind of opposition that Chris Tanev played against. So if you're McDavid or Drysdale or anybody, you're like, okay, well, that's a massive blow to their defense core, and that he's really good at containing our offense, and he's not going to be available. And I have to believe, I would be surprised if he plays tomorrow, because he's incredibly tough. The fact that he left the game tells you he was in just an enormous amount of pain, or he was really hurt, which would lead me to believe he probably won't be available tomorrow. But yeah, it's a huge blow. I don't know, you know, Haskinen can play a ton, obviously, but they probably move Suter up into that role and just hope that he can hang on and spread the minutes around. But it's a significant hole, and Edmonton, you know, to their benefit, should be able to take advantage.
Maybe the better question is, can Dallas win the series without scoring a single goal on the power play?
Well, I mean, what is it, 8 games in a row now for the Edmonton Oilers where they have been perfect on the power play, 23 for 23, and mixing in shorthanded goals as well. So, you know, there's different kinds of power plays that don't score. There are power plays where you snap it around, you create chances, your best players feel good, the crowd is energized. Like, even if you don't score, there are positives to be taken from it. And that happens at times during games and series. It happens. But then there's also what Dallas is up against right now, where they're not getting anything done. Like, they're having a hard time getting in. They're not threatening. They're getting under pressure. They're getting clears. The other team is building confidence. And it erodes the top player's game. Like, they feel worse about themselves because they're not thriving on the power play. So, yeah, I mean, even if they don't score, they got to get better at it. They have to have more positive things happen, even if those aren't necessarily goals, to win the series. But, you know, Dallas would also tell you, listen, it's 2-2. We're going home, albeit they haven't been great at home. But they're 2 out of 3 games at home with Ottinger and Nett against Stuart Skinner. Like, you would take those chances probably at the beginning of the series. So, you know, momentum swings back and forth. But I think the Dallas Stars would feel, you know, they're still in a good spot.
For sure, but that is like nuts what Edmonton has been able to do on the PK. Yeah. I mean, Dallas had a power play with 6.5 minutes to go, and it was a 2-goal game. If they score, it's a game again, and they just couldn't do a thing with the puck. Nothing. Finishing up with Mike Johnson on Melnick in the Afternoon on TSN 690 with Andy Bennett and John Still.
Mike, what is Game 5 to come down to tonight between the Panthers and the Rangers?
I think it comes down to Shesterkin being great, because I expect Florida to push play again like they have in games 3 and 4. So the goaltending is going to have to be fantastic for the New York Rangers. I think that second line of Zibanejad and Kreider are going to have to start being more impactful. They got a new winger, it looks like, in Filip Hedl tonight. Looks like Roslovic's going to be out. So those guys are going to have to chip in. It can't just be the Panarin, Lafreniere, Trocheck group and a little Barkley-Goudreau sprinkled in there. There's got to be something else going on. But the drawback for the Rangers, I wonder how they're feeling. Like, saw Vinny Trocheck take his glove off the other night. He basically had, it looked like he had a cast on his hand. He has so much tape on there. And you see, you know, Adam Fox is not quite healthy. Like, this is what Florida can do to you. They just wear you down physically. And I wonder where the Rangers are at physically with the pounding they're taking from Florida. So that's the Rangers side for Florida. It's just more of the same. Just play the same way. You know, trust that the numbers, the chances, the volume will result in you getting the goals you need. So it's fascinating. The Rangers have something special going on this year, but obviously if the Rangers don't win tonight, they're not going to win the series. So it's a big one. It's fun. I'm in New York right now, Mitch, your favorite city other than Montreal, and it's got a good vibe. Like, the Rangers fans are right into it.
What you mentioned just before Andy jumps in here. Well, go ahead, Andy, because I did want to pick up on the injury thing, but go ahead.
Just when you're talking about trying to get the Rangers, but specifically Shesterkin, like somebody, a goalie that's so dialed in, what can you do early? I mean, aside from just like, let's go run the goalie, what can you do to try and just get him out of the zone that he's in?
I mean, you talk about running him, Andy. is it worth the 5-minute major to take a run at him? There's not a lot you can do, obviously, right? Like, it's all the staples: get in his way, make it hard for him to see, keep him in his crease. One thing Shesterkin likes to do specifically, Andy, is that he loves playing the puck. He's the best in the league at, like, passing the puck out of their own end. So that's one part of the game, like, smart with the dumps. Don't let him feel like he's involved unless he's making saves. That's one thing you can try to do. Make him go laterally, you know, all that kind of stuff. Rebounds, crash the net hard. If you happen to get cross-checked into him, don't try too hard not to fall on top of him. The stuff that every team does. But beyond that, I mean, just hope that at some point he becomes human, because he's playing at times in an otherworldly level.
Does anyone ever try on purpose to, like, rifle a slap shot off his mask or a goalie's mask?
No, this is not Bobby Hall in 1972. The masks are too good. They don't care. They put their head in front of it on purpose. Like, it does not bother them at all.
Wow.
Like, so that would be a waste. Now, you can try to shoot it under the bar, and it may hit him in the head, whatever, but no, the idea of ringing one off the shoulders or buzzing the tower, it doesn't really fly anymore.
You were mentioning the injuries, and we've talked about this, Fox and Nick Jensen, that knee-on-knee, accidental or not, but the other night we saw him flexing his right arm. He hasn't scored a goal yet, and I remember the Stanley Cup drive that the Canadians were on until they ran into Tampa in the final. They had two defensemen who could shoot the puck, Weber and Petrie, who couldn't shoot the puck. They were, like, so many key players were banged up, but specifically Weber had everything wrong with him physically, including his thumb. Petrie couldn't shoot the puck. That was two offensive weapons they didn't have, and I just wonder if there's something, if it's wrist, hand-related, or arm-related that is keeping Fox from being the Fox that we know.
Yeah, I think it's his shoulder. Just a guess by watching. And you're exactly right. And tells you how tough the guys have to be, Mitch. He's playing every shift. He's not missing a beat. He's not bailing on checks. And he's playing with something that is debilitating enough that he can't shoot normally. Like, that's pretty significant. Like, Philip Hronek out in Vancouver. Apparently he went like 6 weeks between taking slap shots. But he played every game. So, you know, like, this is what guys do. And we saw it last year where the Panthers, Matthew Tkachuk being Exhibit A, but really throughout their lineup, were so beat up by the time they got to the final. They could barely field a roster, let alone a healthy one. And the attrition that it takes to get through 3 rounds, 4 rounds is so big. You have half a dozen guys on each team that wouldn't be playing right now if it was the regular season, but they're playing every shift. And that's part of it. That's part of it. But you just hope that he can manage it. And if they can wrap it up in 2 days, you might get 3 or 4 or 5 days off before the final starts. But you just got to deal with it, because every team has several guys like that.
Can you tell a Yanni Nienema story without dropping an F-bomb?
Okay, here's my best quick Yanni Nienema story. We make the trade. He comes to Montreal 2 days later. At that point, we had gone to Tremblant for like the little last 3 days. You know, you practice, you play golf, team building stuff. He shows up and we're out in little Mont-Tremblant town, and we're like little whatever pubs kind of thing hanging out. And I guess he knew Saku from the Finnish national team stuff, but I don't know if he knew a lot of other people. Within 90 minutes, we were back at someone, one of the players, you know, condos, and Yanni decided that he wanted to show us his dance moves and was dancing on the kitchen table shirtless, maybe 75 minutes after being introduced to half the team. And I'm like, this guy is going to be popular. He was going to fit right in, no problem. So that's my PG-est version of a Yanni Nienema story, who was the life of the party always.
Yeah, we got another story, but it was the other part of the body that was...
I kept it shirtless because it felt
easy now.
Tell me more.
Thanks, Mike. Enjoy. We'll talk. Have a great weekend. We'll talk on Tuesday.
All right, guys. Have a great weekend.
Bye-bye.
He's got to do a better job of advancing pucks up the ice and establishing an ozone presence. A lot of that falls on me. I got to be able to get in there and win pucks, get my body on pucks, move my feet, and allow us to get up the ice and start rolling and cutting back and making some plays at the net.
Yeah, Kreider and Zibanejad will score tonight.